Good afternoon. This is Ellie Krug sitting in for Mike McEntee. We just heard from Alan. He did a really great job. It's the afternoon of substitute hosts. I'm thrilled to be back, and I hope that all of you are staying warm in greater Minnesota. We have a day filled with a lot of news going on. There are things just literally breaking as I am speaking, and I'm going to get to some of that breaking news that's happened today involving our president. But before we do that, I had prearranged a call with a guest, and so we're going to do that first, but we will get to some of those things that are pressing right at the moment. I have on the line with me Laura Durso, who is the Vice President of LGBT Research and Communication for American Progress. Laura, are you on the line?
Here and happy to be here with you this afternoon.
Laura, thank you for being on the line. And listeners, what this is about is the Department of Defense going forward with allowing transgender recruits to apply for military service, and then certainly affirming those service members who are already serving our country. As some may know, beginning January 1st, following a series of court decisions, the Department of Defense went back to what had been its established course of allowing transgender service members to serve. And as a reminder for our listeners, those of you who are new to the show, the reason you're hearing a woman's name with what is a masculine voice is that I am transgender. And I'd prearranged this call with Laura to have this discussion today. Laura, tell us what you can about how we got here with the Department of Defense being in a position again to allow for the enlistment of transgender service members.
Sure, absolutely, and happy to do so. You know, there's a lot of pieces that came together to get us where we are today with allowing for open service for all transgender people who want to serve, not just those people who are currently serving but who want to enlist or commission in the military. You know, so for folks who aren't familiar, back when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, that really only affected people who identified as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or queer, or, you know, ended discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, but that left transgender people out. And so there were actively serving transgender people who still had to live under the threat of being discharged. And in 2016, during the summer, the Obama administration started to end that policy. And, you know, they had a plan that was basically going to play out over a year. And so, you know, basically to summarize, folks who are currently serving active duty and others could be out. And there were processes in place to make sure that, you know, that went well. And then what we were kind of fighting over at the end here was there were folks who we had not allowed for people to enlist, you know, to join new recruits. And the Trump administration had delayed the implementation of that policy by 6 months. And then people probably remember that the president himself sent out a series of tweets early one Wednesday morning saying that transgender people were not fit to serve. There was a lot that was going on at that time. There were people in Congress who were trying to get this done legislatively. There were members of the House of Representatives who were trying to ban transgender people to deny them health care. And that didn't happen. There were forces that really kept that from happening in Congress. And so I think what happened was that, you know, there were still people who weren't satisfied and there was still a base to keep happy. And so, you know, the president took them up on trying to do this via executive action. So, and so we, you know, we got a win in the courts after that happened.
Well, Laura, let me ask you, how many transgender service members do you think we're talking about in the military?
You know, there's different estimates. The RAND Corporation has, you know, an estimate in the sort of 10,000 to 15,000 actively serving and reserve component people who are actively in the military. So we are talking about, you know, several thousand people. There's only about an estimated 1.4 million adults in the United States who identify as transgender. And as we know, only about 1% of the population even volunteers for the military. So we're talking about sort of percents of percents. But still, you know, denying an occupation and denying the opportunity to serve to even one person based on their gender identity, you know, that's discrimination.
Well, and we got here because, as you mentioned, the tweet by President Trump in July, in which in one failed tweet, he dismissed an entire class of humans from the military. Personally, when I saw that, I've never served in the military, but he was talking about my community, and I've got to tell you, it broke my heart when I read that.
Absolutely. To see the president, it's sort of like the harm was already done. You know, we've won in the courts, and now, fortunately, we've, you know, been able to see this policy move forward. But it is really meaningful and hurtful to have the president of the United States say that because of your gender identity, you cannot serve your country with distinction. And it is just, you know, as a non-trans person, that offends my sensibilities, and it breaks my heart for the many trans young people who we know suffer from increased mental health issues, many of whom contemplate suicide. You know, to hear that from the commander-in-chief, you know, for anyone, even if they're not looking to serve in the military, it's utterly unconscionable, I think, that he would have done that.
Well, and I think what was, for me at least personally, what was heartening was that heartwarming was that, after the tweet, that there were people who came out of the wings who I never expected to support transgender people, such as Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham, who both said things in favor of trans people serving. And so for me, what that represented, I appreciate your opinion, was that society has actually moved along quite a bit as it relates to accepting transgender people. When we have people who are hawks, you know, saying that trans people could serve, I thought was really something.
I agree. You know, it's sort of a replay from Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when folks like John McCain were saying that this was going to be a problem, that it would weaken our military readiness to have people serving. And what we know is that that's just not the case. That good research and, you know, frankly, reality tells us that there are, you know, brave people serving in the military of all sexual orientations and all gender identities, and, you know, the force was ready for this. And so I agree. I took heart that John McCain, Richard Shelby, others in Congress who really aren't that friendly to the LGBTQ community, generally speaking, but I think have a real reverence for the military. And I think that something like the tweets from the president that are so obviously discriminatory and obviously targeting people on the basis of their gender identity, you know, I think everybody can at least draw a line and say, this doesn't make any sense. There's no reason for this. And just as you said, you know, the public is really coming to understand better who transgender people are and what issues they face. There's some public opinion polling. The, you know, percent of people who say that they know a transgender person has doubled between 2011 and 2017, and around 84% say that they know what being transgender means, even if they don't know a transgender person. And so I think it's really important that now we have these stories and that there were people who are willing to risk their careers by coming out and saying that they were serving, and telling their stories to help us to get to a place where people can say there's no reason to force people out who can serve.
Well, and I think the other untold story here is how the courts have been a protector for transgender people. I mean, we're here again because at least four different federal courts ruled in favor of transgender service members or those who wanted to serve in the time period between the tweet in July and December. That's how this came about. We've had finally a couple of appeals courts saying that it was unconstitutional to just summarily bar transgender people from serving. The Department of Justice, somewhat surprisingly, did not resist the latest Court of Appeals decision, didn't seek to appeal it. And then the Department of Defense said, we're going to go forward and start to enlist transgender service members, assuming that they're fit for service in other ways, correct?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I think we have to, of course, be vigilant. This is an administration that in its first year has really shown that they are no friend to the community. And so even though they've dropped this particular appeal, you know, I think that they, we may still see opposition yet. I think it's going to be hard to put this back in the bottle. I think once you know, people are allowed to serve openly, once they are allowed to enlist, it's going to be very, very hard to tell people that they can't. Can't do that, because the reality will have set in that this isn't going to affect readiness in any way, shape, or form, and, you know, we should take all people who are willing to serve. You know, and it's funny that, I think it's funny that this started with a tweet, and the tweets actually mattered, because the way that the courts approach this question is to say, well, is there a reason why this policy is in place, and can we point to any rational reason why they would be doing this? And I think it matters that the president kind of went off in the morning and sort of without really thinking about it, said what he said, because I think it's very easy, and the courts could very easily point to animus on the part of the president, on the part of the administration, which they've been able to do in things like the Muslim ban, where, you know, the president kept calling it a travel ban, and they were able to point to his tweets and say, well, this is the evidence that it's a travel ban. And I think a similar thing happened here, where the courts were very, very clear that this was based on nothing but a desire to discriminate on the basis of gender identity. And courts for 15 years, more than, have found that, you know, treating someone differently on the basis of their gender identity is discrimination.
Treating people different on the basis of almost anything that humans use to group and label other humans with is also discrimination. Laura, it has been a pleasure to talk with you. I really appreciated it. Hopefully, you and I will be talking sometime again on the air together. We've been speaking with Laura Durso from the Center for American Progress. Thanks so very much, Laura, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Good day, at least, to celebrate this.
We've been talking about what it means with the Department of Defense now allowing transgender people to openly serve in the military and to enlist. When we come back from our break, I'm going to cover some of that breaking news that we've been handling and dealing with today on other news media. Thank you.
Let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking.
Hello, I'm Dr. Vladimir Bonsurikov, the director and president of the Museum of Russian Art, which hosts the finest collection of Russian art in North America, as well as an award-winning gift shop, Izba. Unique gifts, artworks, and artisan-made products are sourced from artists and jewelers who use traditional Russian materials to create stunning pieces for purchase. Izba Gift Shop is on Facebook and Instagram. Our museum is at tmora.org. Visit Izba Gift Shop for that special gift you will cherish.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Being a dog is awesome, except when you really gotta go, but you're stuck inside. That's why I had my human call the Urban Dog. Daily walks, field trips, play groups, one-on-one time, safe off-leash play, and pet sitting. I love being an Urban Dog.
The Urban Dog works with your schedule and can create a plan that fits your needs. The Urban Dog. Exercise, explore, socialize. Let the journey begin. Call 651-231-6333. That's 651-231-6333.
Hello, fellow AM950 listeners. This is Jaja from Nightingale at 26 in Lindale. Come experience our delicious signature dishes and exciting rotation of inventive seasonal fare for my wife and chef, Carrie, and her team. Nightingale is the perfect place to gather for any occasion with our extensive wine, beer, and cocktail selection, along with our dedication to great service. We offer a full menu every day from 4 to 1 a.m., two award-winning daily happy hours, and weekend brunch at 10. More at nightingalempls.com.
I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show. And this Saturday at 9 a.m., we'll be talking about Theater Unbound's 17th Annual Extreme Theater Smackdown, taking place on January 13th at Stepping Stone Theater. Six new plays will be created in 24 hours. And on our show, we'll have our own Radio Theater Smackdown, with an original script being created and performed in just 1 hour. Listen in this Saturday, 9 a.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
And we're back. We're back. This is Ellen Krug sitting in for Mike while he's on vacation, getting some well-deserved rest down in the Southwest. Mike, if you're listening, I hope that you are making sure that you get that rest. As I said before we took our break, a lot is happening right now nationally in our country, and I want to address it because it is important. It had not been on my agenda to talk about today, but so you're going to get this a little bit of ad hoc. All of this centers around a book by Michael Wolff, who's a writer for The New Yorker, a book he's penned. The book is titled Fire and Fury, and the Guardian out of the United Kingdom, out of England, picked up a copy of the book and started reporting on the book and what it had to have in it. And in sum, it's a blockbuster with a lot of revelations about what was going on in the Trump administration in the lead up to the election and somewhat afterwards. The biggest buzz right now, at least what's on the airwaves, as reported by a number of different news sources, including CNN, are the revelations about what Steve Bannon had to say about the infamous meeting in the spring of 2016 on the 25th floor of the Trump Tower, when various Russian operatives met with Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, and Jared Kushner. Flynn, who apparently researched this book incessantly and had multiple visits to the White House to interview various White House personnel, including Bannon, quotes Bannon as saying to this effect, the three senior guys in the campaign thought it was a good idea to meet with a foreign government inside Trump Tower in the conference room on the 25th floor with no lawyers. They didn't have any lawyers, Bannon continued, according to The Guardian. Quote, even if you thought this was not treasonous or unpatriotic or bad ...... and I happen to think it was all of that, you should have called the FBI immediately. Bannon goes on to say that he believes that all that's going on now with Robert Mueller and his investigation is that it is turning into an investigation about money laundering. And Bannon went on to say that about that, that when they get to Don Jr., about the meeting on the 25th floor, as well as about other things, that Don Jr. is going to crack like an egg on national TV. Bannon also reportedly told Wolf that special counsel Mueller's investigation is centered on money laundering to the effect that the White House is, quote, sitting on a beach trying to stop a Category 5 hurricane. Now, no doubt, as we go forward today and tomorrow and other days, there's going to be more revelations about what is in this book, Fire and Fury. No doubt that there will be repercussions felt by members of the Trump administration as a result of what Wolf is reporting. And no doubt that people in the administration understand that there are things happening in the government, that things took place before the election. In fact, Wolf reports that many of the high-level people who accompanied Trump to his beginning of his administration, many of those folks who were in the campaign never expected to win. And when you don't expect to win, there's sometimes you cut a lot of corners because you don't think it'll ever see the light of day. Now those actions are beginning to see the light of day. So I think that this is the beginning, perhaps, of a very tumultuous, even more tumultuous period for the Trump administration and for our government. Let me just remember and say that phrase once again. I want to repeat it. Our government. That's what this is. This is our government. These are people that we elected and then appointees of people that we elected who are in place making decisions that affect everyone in one way or another, including their behavior. All I can just say is stay tuned. The other political story here, which is one that is under the radar rather than above it, involves what happened at the Minnesota Supreme Court today. In a very little noticed case, but a dispute that has potentially large consequences. Today, the Minnesota Supreme Court heard arguments on a case brought by Rebecca Otto, our state auditor, challenging a 2015 state law that allows counties to hire private audit firms. Auditing of governmental entities is exceedingly important. It's one way that we make sure that, first of all, taxpayer money is being spent wisely. But in addition to that, it is, I mean, there is fraud that occurs. There is embezzlement that occurs across the board, both in government as well in private sector. And audits are very, very important. Otto's case, Rebecca Otto's case, bringing it as the state auditor, is that she believes that the law, that a law enacted in 2015, which allowed for auditing of governmental entities to be conducted by CPA firms, according to some strict standards, Otto's position on this is that the law is unconstitutional, that it is an infringement on her powers as state auditor, and that the law should not be allowed to stand. Now, why is this important to us as ordinary Minnesotans? Well, maybe from this perspective. The law initially was enacted with the idea that it would allow for less expensive government, when actually, in reality, it may allow for more expensive, because up heretofore, the state auditor's office was in charge of doing audits of governmental entities and ensuring that those governmental entities were operating in good business practices and doing what they were supposed to do with the money. You bring in private CPA firms and you don't have that kind of governmental oversight over another government. Now, I'm a huge believer in CPAs and I have no axe to grind with any of them, but you know, all I have to say is Enron and an old name of Arthur Anderson, and you have some idea of how things can go awry even with private CPA firms. So this case was argued before the Minnesota Supreme Court today. Stay tuned. I'm sure that the court will issue a ruling sometime in the next 6 months. We'll see what impact this has on Rebecca Otto's role as state auditor, and perhaps maybe what impact it may have on politics as we start to gear up for the governor's race later in 2018. Now, when we come back from our break, I have a very special guest, someone that I have is a personal hero of mine, and someone who will talk about another topic, racism. In the Midwest, particularly racism in Iowa. I'm an Iowan by heart. So when we come back, we'll get into that discussion. Thanks so very much. You don't even see me. You could never be me.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. How do you choose an automotive repair shop? I bet you look for quality and dependability. You want someone you can trust to do the job right the first time. It saves you money and hassle because you're not coming back over and over again. My team of top-notch automotive specialists knows vehicles inside and out, and I guarantee it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Tap, taste, and treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis, and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
Love the Scandinavian feel of Ingebrigtsen's on East Lake Street? Then I invite you to also Ingebrigtsen's Coffee Bar in Norway House on East Franklin Avenue. Our menu includes Nordic waffles, lefse dogs, and Scandinavian pastries and cookies, which pair well with our Spring Grove sodas and Viking coffee, especially roasted for us by Peace Coffee. Also, Ingebrigtsen's Coffee Bar is located at 913 East Franklin Avenue and online at ingebrigtsens.com. The first vowel is an I, the rest are E's.
Does your basement or crawl space have damp, musty odors? Do you worry about indoor gases and pollutants? Everyday living generates moisture that can nourish mold and odors, even asthmatic triggers. Indoor pollutants linked to respiratory ailments, birth defects, and cancers can become trapped in your home. You can't buy health, but you can buy Wave's moisture control and air quality products. Wave Home Solutions, for a dry, healthy home. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to dryhome123.com. That's dryhome123.com.
Lawmakers are trying to pass new anti-LGBT legislation. How does this affect you? Is your family protected? Do you have the right to make medical and financial decisions for your family? Are you the legal parent to your children? If you are unsure of the answers to these questions, it is important that you call Unique Estate Law now. This is Chris Timchuk. I've worked with countless LGBT families to protect their rights. Protect your rights now at uniqueestatelaw.com or call 952-260-1806.
And we're back. Hello, hello, humans. This is Ellie Krug sitting in for Mike, who is on vacation. And next, I want to talk about the subject of racism in the Midwest. We as humans generally group and label other humans in a variety of ways. My day job is as a trainer and speaker on human inclusivity. Last week, I came across an editorial about racism in the Midwest, and I reached out to one of my personal heroes. On the line, we have a man named Art Cullen, who is from Storm Lake, Iowa, and who happens to be an editor of the Storm Lake Times. Art, are you on the line?
Hi.
How are you, Art?
I'm cold. It's probably colder in Storm Lake than it is in the Twin Cities.
Oh, I don't know. It's a 23 below wind chill here. Art, make sure that the audience understands who I'm talking to. You are an editor of the Storm Lake Times, as I said. It's a newspaper that you co-own with your brother, as well as you have your wife and your son working at the paper. Is that right?
Right. And our news hound, Mabel, she's an English setter mix that we rescued from the pound.
All right. And the paper has about a 3,000-person circulation in Storm Lake, Iowa, a town of about 10,000 people. Is that right?
Well, we're a twice-a-week newspaper, and it's about 3,000 households, but we actually don't know what the population of Storm Lake is. We think it's probably about 15,000. The census says 10,000, but we have such a high population of immigrants, many of whom are undocumented, that we really aren't sure how many people live in Storm Lake.
Well, and Art, what really brings us here, in part, is that you, in small town Iowa, with small town newspaper, are the recipient of a 2017 Pulitzer Prize award for your editorial writing. correct?
Right. Yeah.
Congratulations on that. Congratulations on that. And, you know, I'm an aspiring writer, and you're one of my heroes. I just want you to know that.
Well, you should select better heroes. But anyway, thank you. You're very kind. I'm humbled.
Well, and,
really.
Well, and what really brought us here is that you wrote an editorial.
A year ago, I was just a bumpkin editor from the middle of nowhere.
Something tells me you're always more than that. But yeah. What has us talking is that you penned an editorial in early December. The editorial is titled Shocked. And it is, you write, you, the newspaper, and your colleague, shocked by a number of different incidents have taken place in Iowa revolving around racism. But the one in particular, the one item that caused you to pick up the pen and really write was something that happened at a basketball game, or was it a football game, where there were some announcers at a small town radio station who made some very racist comments about the opposing team members. Do I have that right?
There was a small town in Iowa, Forest City, and there was a basketball game, and the visiting team from Eagle Grove, Iowa, which is a meatpacking town, a poultry processing community, and there's a lot of Latinos there, and there's some Latinos on the basketball team, and the announcers, thinking the mics were off, were talking about why don't they all just go home, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't just that. It was other incidents that have happened, particularly involving Storm Lake, which has been a heavily diverse community since the 1980s. And we've taken a lot of abuse over the years, as has Worthington, Minnesota, another early settlement community for immigrants and meatpacking.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we're very much kind of like a twin city to Worthington. And we're about 90 miles south. And anyway, we've long been a magnet for immigrants, and we've taken a lot of abuse for it. And there were teams from nearby communities that were coming here to games and calling our players beaners. And at another game, a Sudanese player was called the N-word. And, you know, it just keeps happening. And they're all from communities that are lily white, and they've never met a Sudanese person or a Latino before, so they have no idea what these people are about. And it just speaks to the ignorance that people have of other cultures and races.
Well, Art, I want to just quote something from your editorial, because I'm in awe a little bit that you just said it. So here goes, in the editorial about what's going on in Iowa and generally in the Midwest. You write this, quote, "Hey kids, we have a problem right here in River City, and it ain't pool. It's racism. It's all over Iowa. It's especially deeply embedded in the 4th Congressional District, which continues to embrace Representative Steve King and gives him comfortable double digits margins of victory, period," unquote. Art, it's exceedingly rare for a newspaper to just call out racism as racism. And I want to applaud you first for doing that, because I'm a big believer that until you label it, until you talk about it outright,
right,
until you're honest about it, how in the world can you make any progress? And from what I read about what's happened in Storm Lake, perhaps with some of your leadership, but with the leadership of other community leaders, that there has been, Storm Lake is an island, a beacon of hope as it relates to inclusivity and race relations. Do I have that right?
Oh, I'd like to think so. Yeah, the police chief, for example, who's also a deacon in the Catholic Church, has become kind of a national spokesperson for how to police a diverse community. And he goes around, you know, he's been out, he even speaks to urban police departments on urban crime trends, moving to rural communities, etc. And so they don't arrest undocumented immigrants just for being undocumented. And so I guess you could say that's a sanctuary city practice, although the police chief adamantly denies that we're a sanctuary city. He just says, you know, if you harass immigrants, they aren't going to cooperate with law enforcement. And likewise, if you don't have good relations in minority communities generally with African Americans or Asians, you know, you're going to have problems with those communities. It's just plain common sense. And so he's been evangelizing this message for 20 years around the country. And the school district also doesn't ask students where they come from or if they have papers. They just say, you know, you need an education, and we give them an education. And so now we have a charter school where in 5 years you graduate with a high school diploma and an associate's degree from the local community college. So we're trying to get those immigrants on the first ladder of educational attainment.
And right.
So it is all working, you know. It is all working in Storm Lake. And you could say that we're enabling, you know, exploitive meat packers, and we can go down that road. But on the other hand, you know, we're dealing the hand that we got, and we're playing the game on the field that we were allowed.
Well, why is that? Why is that?
The best of it.
Why is that in Storm Lake, Art, versus some of the other communities? I mean, you know, generally Iowans are really good people. Generally Iowans want to do the right thing. Is it just fear? I mean, is it people in Storm Lake are less afraid, and people in other communities are more afraid? Are people more buying into the hate mongering that Steve King stokes?
Well, Storm Lake has been a college town. It's home to Buena Vista University, and so we've been exposed to international students. I mean, when I was a little kid, there was one black person in town, and he played basketball at Buena Vista. He was from White Plains, New York, Furman Rents. He was my hero when I was shagging balls. And, you know, so, and he was every kid's hero in Storm Lake. So, you know, Storm Lake has always, has never really been, you know, push people away. It's been a regional salesman's town, you know, so people come and go. And also, we welcomed a lot of Eastern Europeans to Northwest Iowa, displaced people from World War II who couldn't speak English. And the only place they could get a job was in meatpacking. And so we have a long history here of welcoming different people through the college, through being a regional salesman's community, and through meatpacking, which has always been the first rung on the ladder of American success from the days of the jungle.
Right. But there's a, as I'm finding in my work, there's a difference between being welcoming and being inclusive. Because many times people who are foreign-born or people who are quote-unquote different are welcomed. Hello, here you are. Here's a house for you, or we'll help you get established. But then we're never going to invite you over to dinner. You know, we're never going to invite you into our Rotary group. Those kinds of things. And the reason I'm so interested in your story, Shocked, that appeared in the Storm Lake Times on December 8th, is because it does seem that things are being done right in Storm Lake. And we need to have more examples for Midwestern communities in particular that they can go to, that they know what to do.
And need to have people quit hassling us for what we're trying to do right. You know, Steve King, our own congressman, who was actually born in Storm Lake, is the most xenophobic member of Congress. And now I see that his old crony, Michelle Bachmann, wants to run for governor or
Senator.
U.S. Senator in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were joined at the hip in Congress. And, you know,
is it
I
fear?
Think that Storm Lake and Worthington are showing the way forward. I think Worthington, too, has done a great job trying to cope with a rapidly depopulating rural southwest Minnesota, and likewise northwest Iowa. What are we going to do? The only way we can save ourselves is through immigration. We can't have enough babies, white babies, as Steve King would like, or Michelle Bachmann, for that matter.
Art, we're going to run out of time here.
I'm sorry.
But before we do, I also want to make sure that the audience knows that you've got a book coming out. Could you talk about that quickly?
Thank you. Yes, I have a book coming out in October. It's about rural Iowa, kind of an ode to rural Iowa, if you will, and it talks about Iowa politics, the First in the Nation caucuses, and how we came to embrace Steve King and Donald Trump after electing Tom Harkin and Barack Obama. So I think it's interesting, and I hope Minnesota readers would find it interesting, too. I do talk a lot about going to college at good old St. Thomas in St. Paul, where I graduated with a journalism degree in 1980.
Oh, well, that's that'll make the St. Thomas people very happy to know that you're getting your book published. So, Art, thank you for being on the show. I wish we had more time. I've been speaking with Art Cullen from the Storm Lake Times. Art, thanks so very much for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to have you. That was Art Cullen, recipient of a 2017 Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing. When we come back from our break, I'm going to opine a little bit about what is happening in our world. Thank you. He had given them
up. Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
This is Dan Brooks, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with RBC Wealth Management. For the past 19 years, I've been managing wealth for individuals, institutions, and corporate retirement plan sponsors. Throughout my career, I have seen common traits in successful investors. They include the courage to be diversified, the willingness to work with a professional, the discipline to follow a plan, and patience. I welcome the opportunity to help contribute to your financial success. Call me at 612-371-2396.
Visit the wine bar at Cafe Latte and enjoy a unique handcrafted pizza and glass of wine. The perfect place for an intimate night or an evening with friends. Choices range from spicy Italian sausage and sweet roasted peppers to the one-of-a-kind nacho chicken pizza layered with blue corn tortilla chips. The approachable wine list offers over 30 by the glass with special emphasis on wines from Washington State. End your night with one of Cafe Latte's melt-in-your-mouth desserts, 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul.
Hi, Matt McNeil from AM950. I bought my newest Sienna from Rudy Luther Toyota in July, and I'm so in love with it. It's comfortable if I'm running the kids to activities or on a longer road trip. It's safe with backup cameras, blind spot protection, and the safety features Toyotas are known for. And it's fun with the bells and whistles, EcoDrive, sunroof, and so much more. I love my new Rudy Luther Toyota Sienna. Stop into Rudy Luther and test drive one yourself at 394 and 169, 5 miles west of downtown Minneapolis.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.co. OP.
Who's your most trusted companion? Who's with you 24/7? What do you never leave home without? Your phone. But the screen is shattered. Don't panic. Bring it to Computer Revolution with cell phone repair. We have over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. We'll replace that screen and have it back same day. Computer Revolution with cell phone repair in Roseville at Highway 36 in Fairview. Or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones. Same day, 7 days a week.
And we are back. Hello, everyone. It's been a whirlwind of a show so far. We've covered a lot of different things. And I want to take this moment, this time right now, to do something that probably is the only good thing I'm really capable of doing well on the radio, and that is talking to listeners. And I really want to, catch my breath a bit. I want to pause a little bit, and I want to talk about what's happening with our country right at the moment. And so, I spoke earlier today about the news breaking with the Wolf book, Fire and Fury, and some of the inner workings and some of the inner things that happened with the Trump administration. But yesterday we were treated to a sort of a tit-for-tat tirade between President Trump and Kim Jong-un about who has the biggest nuclear button. And while, I watched Jimmy Kimmel and other talk hosts make fun of that exchange, there is a series of questions that come to my mind as a result of all of that. Now, this is not the first time we've heard the president direct tweets, tirades, words towards North Korea. I presume it won't be the last. But the question I have to start with, and I have a series of questions, the question I have to start with is this: am I the only person afraid for our country, for our world, relative to the potential for war with North Korea? Now, I don't want to scare anyone, but I do want to have a real heart-to-heart conversation here, because here's where I'm coming from. I'm 61 years old. I was born 11 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I entered kindergarten 16 years after both of those horrors took place. I entered school during the midst of the Cold War. I vividly remember the drills, the air raid drills in school, cowering under desks, being told, head to knees, watch for the, don't look at the blast, don't look at the windows. I remember public service announcements about bomb shelters and air raid precautions. I remember seeing the symbol, the radioactive symbol and all of those things about where those bomb shelters were located. In my lifetime, I have lived through the Vietnam War, the Iranian hostage crisis, Iraq War I, Iraq War II, Iraq War II being preceded by 9/11. I've lived through the war, and we continue to live through the war in Afghanistan. And I've lived through, as many of you have, countless other incidents where American men and women have put their lives at risk, where they have died for us, and sometimes fairly needlessly. We have a society right now where war, the killing of other humans, is the subject of video games. Right now, I looked, the most popular video game in 2016 was Call of Duty World War II. It glorifies war. And my question is, do the images that you can call up on a video game or on your laptop or that we see on TV, right now we have a SEAL Team 6 TV show, have those images caused us to be desensitized to the horror of war? That's the second question I have. The third question I have is, what are our politicians doing? We now have them as if it was a game of chance, as if we were gambling. They're now rating the odds of war between the United States and North Korea. We've got Lindsey Graham saying 30% chance, but possibly 70% chance if certain things happen. We have other people saying that the odds are more likely that we'll go to war. Do you know, once we start normalizing the idea of going to war, it becomes far more possible. I have another question, and that is, I can't help but wonder if racism and human tribalism are partially at work here. After all, if war comes, it will primarily be people who are Asian who will bear the brunt of the destruction and death. It won't be primarily Caucasian people who will die. Now, of course, in South Korea right now, we have at least 30,000 military personnel, as well as their dependents, as well as over 100,000 expatriate Americans living in South Korea. Of course, they would all be at risk. But the question here, I wonder, as our president talks about pushing a button in response to another button, the question I have is, does he view Asian folks less valuable? And thus, is it more likely, more easy for him to push a button? I have another question as well. How many times have we learned this lesson? And here we are yet again. You know, the craziest question I have is this. What if our president feels the breath of Bob Mueller on his neck? You know, our president, a man who, you know, is, I think, a very afraid person. What if he feels that Mueller is coming closer and closer? The question I have is, is it possible that he would provoke a war with North Korea as a way of distracting us? I know that that sounds crazy. I hope it is crazy, but I can't help but wonder about it. The last question I want to ask is this. If I'm not the only one who's afraid, where is everyone else? Where is the march? Where are the meetings? Where is the rally to demand that our country do the same thing, which is talk to North Korea? Talk to them. Acknowledge, recognize, they've got it now. They've got the nuclear weapons. There's not much we can do about it other than to try and find a way to coexist. Thanks so very much for listening today. I want to give a big thanks to my producer, Hunter. Thank you, Hunter. You've done a great job. This is Ellie Krug. I've been sitting in for Mike. I hope to see you and talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so very much. Bye-bye.